Chris Mannix of The Vertical joins us. Chris, it's Dave and Katie. I know you're slammed right now. We appreciate you joining us. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Now, first off, I know your former colleague Adrian Wojnarowski has now moved on, and I think there's been an interesting development on Twitter where your buddy Shams, man, is coming through. We used to have Woj bombs, and now we have Sham wows. So if people thought the Vertical was done when Woj moved on, in all respect to him, along with you and Shams, you guys are still killing it out there, my man.
Yeah, we're still working. No question. I give
I give
Shams a lot of credit for what he does. I mean, the kid is like, I mean, he's a kid. He's still in college. So it's,
wow,
it's remarkable what he's kind of developed into in a very short period of time. But yeah, he's done a great job. He was all over this Avery Bradley deal, right from jump. And, you know, there's still a lot more to do this offseason.
You better lock him in then. I know you got him on the rookie scale for another 3 years. And then he's got the team option in the fourth. That's
absolutely
good, though. And we all enjoy your work over there. And I know you dip in, I shouldn't say dip in, you got 2 feet in the fight game. We'll get to that a little bit later because I do have a question for you. But let's start with Avery Bradley. Now, you're front and center on the front lines with the Boston Celtics and everything that's going on there. And this is obviously all kind of an offshoot of them trying to clear up to bring Hayward over. Can you give us an update on the talks of a sign and trade with Utah? And Avery Bradley, no offense to Morris, but, man, that seems like Bradley's a hell of a talented player. That seems like a really good price.
Well, there are a lot of layers to this. And for starters, the Celtics had to move somebody, obviously, to clear the cap space to sign Gordon Hayward. And they discussed a sign and trade with Utah, but the Jazz, who were already sending Gordon Hayward out, didn't want to include anything else. And Jay Crowder is an incredibly valuable commodity. I mean, he was a starting small forward on a 53-win team last year, who is among the better defensive players at his position. So Boston, they didn't just want to give him away, especially when he has multiple years at very little money, relatively speaking, left on that contract. Avery Bradley is a better player, and I think I wrote last year, I think he's the most underrated player in the entire NBA. Mm-hmm. But he was on the last year of his contract, and he'd made it clear to me at various times that he was looking to get paid, and it wasn't like he was coming back to Boston a year from now on some kind of hometown discount. And if you look at the Celtics situation next summer with Isaiah Thomas, with Marcus Smart, they've got a lot of guys that are going to look to get paid next offseason. And Bradley, I mean, look, the Knicks are absurd, but they just set the market for shooting guards with Tim Hardaway's 4-year, $71 million deal. Boston was never going to do that. So the Celtics move Bradley. They get back Marcus Morris, who's not the same type of player, but is at least a serviceable body at that 3-4 position. Now they can keep Jay Crowder. Now they can sign Gordon Hayward outright. They don't have to worry about any type of sign and trade situation. So the deal made them on paper weaker, but it was a necessary step to take to get to where they are right now.
Chris, you mentioned that Avery Bradley, obviously, in the final year of his contract. Now, from everything I'm gathering from this news breaking, Detroit is going to be very aggressive in trying to pursue a new deal with him. But what does this mean in terms of what they're going to do with Caldwell Pope, and what's his future in Detroit?
I think his future is non-existent. Unless he takes the qualifying offer and stays there, I don't see that that they would break the bank in Detroit to keep him around. I mean, they'll offer some kind of cap-friendly deal that they can take, but they're not going to go any deeper. I mean, Avery Bradley, I mean, it feels like he's been around forever, but I think he's only 26 years old. I mean, he was part of the Celtics when KG and Paul Pierce were still there after winning a championship. He's still a young guy, though, in this league, and the type of player that Stan Van Gundy's going to love. He makes jump shots. He plays defense. He's perfect. So Caldwell Pope, I think, finds himself on the outside looking in. Now, the options are limited. Can they get Brooklyn, the undisputed king of restricted free agent offer sheets of the last few years, to make him a big offer? If they do, I think the Nets could certainly land him at this point. But outside of Brooklyn and maybe one or two other teams, there really isn't a market for him. So I don't think – I think the Wizards are not – or the Pistons, rather, are probably done with Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Chris Mannix of The Vertical with us on The Drive. Chris, we were talking yesterday about the Celtics, and I struggled with the question, and in the end said I think Boston has passed the Cavaliers in the sense that, no, they don't have LeBron, but I don't like what's going on in Cleveland right now. That's a scary situation. And I read an article yesterday that actually showed, using statistics, that the West could conceivably roll out two All-Star teams that both would be better, at least on paper, than the East's A team. Is the East losing talent and seemingly being a two-headed monster with Boston and Cleveland, is that more of an advantage for the Cavs or more of an advantage for the Celtics, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's more of an advantage for the Celtics right now, because Boston, they have a more sustainable team. Now, Cleveland next year goes into the season as the prohibitive favorite still to win the Eastern Conference. But to describe the Cavaliers as volatile right now would be an understatement. I mean, they don't have a general manager. They don't have any kind of real stability in that front office. And they don't have any idea right now what LeBron James is thinking at the moment. He's out of his contract after next year, and nobody can tell you with any type of definitiveness exactly where he's going to go. So I think Cleveland benefits in the short term, but over the next 4 or 5 years, when you look at Boston's roster with the core guys who are just in the prime of their careers and the young guys, I'm watching Jason Tatum right now, and I'm astonished at what I'm seeing. I mean, this guy looks like he's going to be able to step in and be a stretch four for 15 minutes a game right away. So I think Boston's well-positioned for the next 3, 4, maybe 5 years to emerge as the class of the conference, especially with that conference probably not getting significantly better anytime soon.
And one follow-up on that, another thing we kind of delved into yesterday, and really something that's not being talked about at all, maybe for good reason, but with Dan Gilbert doing whatever the hell Dan Gilbert's doing right now, and as you mentioned, nobody knows where LeBron's head's at. Everything's pointing towards Cleveland doing almost a complete rebuild and everybody leaving the sinking ship. Is there an outside chance that LeBron James doesn't finish the year in Cleveland?
No. I mean, look, he's got a no-trade clause.
Sure.
And he wants control of his future. Plus, if you're the Cavs, you know, you have to go through next season operating like, you know, maybe Kevin Durant has a leg injury, or maybe Steph Curry turns an ankle, or something happens in the Western Conference playoffs that prevents Golden State from getting back to the finals. You have to operate like that all year long. You can't, you know, take the risk of saying, all right, we're going to, you know, try to, you know, convince LeBron to get out and change things up and start the rebuild or whatever you want to call it right away. Then all of a sudden have something happen to Golden State and your opportunity to win another championship goes away. There's just too little reward for that to happen. So I think LeBron is a Cavalier all throughout next season. But July 1st, 2018, it's going to be an interesting few days, more interesting than what we've had these last few days in the NBA.
Yeah, well, and with him not really helping recruit any free agents, that's also a telltale sign that something's really going on there. But I want to ask you,
I don't know, though, because, like, I don't know who he'd be recruiting at this point. Like, you know, do you call Zach Randolph and say, you know, we've got $5 million here for you, turn down 12? It's just
$5 million.
It's a tough one. It's a tough needle to thread there if you're LeBron.
I got to ask you about Rudy Gay signing with the Spurs. He turned down his option with the Kings. It was for the final year of his contract, $14.2 million. He signs a two-year $17.2 million offer with the Spurs. And a lot of people are saying that, oh, he wants to win. He wants to put himself in a situation to win. Obviously, the Kings in the middle of a complete rebuild. But I kind of veer the opposite direction. I think that he gambled and he kind of lost on that one. I'm curious now, though, Chris, how does he fit in to that Greg Popovich, San Antonio Spurs defense, selfless offense? How does Rudy Gay fit into that right now?
Well, first, I agree with you. I you know, look, it's a nice narrative to say that Rudy's leaving money on the table to win, but let's get real. I mean, Rudy thought he was going to get a bigger contract this offseason, and Rudy's kind of the poster child for some of the free agents of 2017 who looked at the summer of 2016 and said, okay, there's all this money out there. I'm going to take advantage of it. It hasn't been the case. I mean, the full max contracts have not been doled out as much as they were last summer. Even the dollars are much less than what they were last summer. And I think Rudy was a victim of that. Now, as far as how he fits in San Antonio, number one, the Spurs don't sign anybody they're not 100% sure is going to fit into exactly what they do. And I think Rudy fits that mold. I mean, he's a 3-4 right now who can be a big in a small lineup, play alongside Kawhi Leonard, give them floor spacing, which you need in a matchup with Golden State. Everything the Spurs do, much like everything the Cavaliers do, has an eye towards Golden State. And I think that San Antonio sees Rudy Gay and his versatility at this stage of his career as being a weapon against some of those small lineups that Golden State goes out there. So, you know, big win for San Antonio, I think, to get a guy who, you know, who told me, I mean, I saw Rudy about a month ago out in Las Vegas, and he told me that he was all the way back. You know, he was starting full basketball activities July 1st, and he was going to be back and ready to go in training camp. If that's the case, you know, San Antonio gets themselves a very good player on a very good contract.
Chris Mannix of The Vertical joining us. And, Chris, we're down in Vegas for Summer League, but this is being broadcast back home in Sacramento, which has a large chip on their shoulder, and understandably so, for getting battered around over the last few years as this team has kind of gone down and back up a black hole. Now we've got Zach Randolph, George Hill, and then yesterday Vince Carter following up that draft. I've heard narratives on both sides from national media. I always respect your take. How do you think the Kings did in the offseason?
Well, look, nobody has pummeled Sacramento more than me, I think, in the last few years. I mean, they've in some ways been the gift that keeps on giving, because they do foolish things and then they lie about it and then they do them again. And it all seems to trickle out because that's how things work. But this has been unquestionably, in my opinion, an A offseason for this team. I mean, from the draft and who they were able to secure there and the moves they made to free agency. I mean, every single one of the guys that they've signed over the last few days, including Vince Carter, makes a ton of sense for them. And the contracts they handed out are good contracts, 2-year deals, partial guarantees in the third. I mean, the George Hill, look, there's a risk with George Hill because he gets hurt all the time. And if he does get hurt, it's not going to be a good look. But a short-term deal for a guy to step in and be a mentor and a backcourt mate with De'Aaron Fox, throw in Zach Randolph on a short-term deal, who is still, I think, a very effective player, albeit not the same player he was 4 or 5 years ago. Even Vince, as a veteran mentor to some of these young guys, every single thing that Vlade Divac, Scott Perry, and Ken Cantonell in that front office has done has been, I think, flawless this offseason. Now, they're not a playoff team because, you know, you need like 50 wins to get in the playoffs in the West next year. But if you're Sacramento, this is a huge, huge positive step in the right direction. The next is player development. I mean, you need Dave Yeager and his staff to dig in with some of these young guys. I mean, De'Aaron Fox, I think, is a little bit more of a project than people are expecting. He's going to have to get bigger and stronger. He's going to have to improve that jump shot. But if they can be as good at player development during the season as they were in acquiring talent over the last few weeks of this offseason, it's the first summer and the first really time period in a long time that I can remember where Sacramento has done really smart and really prudent things.
Well, and Chris, I think this is something that fans have to keep in mind as well. Free agency over the last several years for this team was selling DeMarcus Cousins and trying to make this team into a playoff team. I look at it this way. You've got George Hill, Zach Randolph, and Vince Carter, all three guys coming from playoff teams last year and big contributors on those teams. There's no confusion with these signings when they agreed to come to Sacramento that they're a part of a rebuild and they're a part of bringing this young group of guys along. Doesn't that say a little bit about them in terms of the signing and kind of the message that's being sent from the front office?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that there's a little bit more clarity in Sacramento. And I don't even know, this isn't even a phrase, but less of a dumpster fiery feel to what Sacramento, kind of is right now. I mean, everything, DeMarcus Cousins was not an appealing guy to play with. He just wasn't. I mean, free agents, some guys liked him, the Kentucky guys liked him. But, when players were evaluating their options, and I heard this from agents all the time, that, playing alongside DeMarcus wasn't, this big appeal. Now, clearly they're less talented with him gone, but there's more clarity coming from the organization about what they are and what they intend to be. And look, there is, I've always thought that Vlade was a smart guy, but the lack of experienced hands in that front office always perplexed me. Now you add Ken a year ago, Scott Perry there now. There's just, I think, more of a professionalism within that front office, which pays dividends when you're talking to agents and trying to lure players. So they're, you know, I can't predict a win total, especially not in that conference right now. But no matter what, this has been a huge positive offseason for Sacramento.
And Chris, last thing, we're out of time, but since you guys brought up DeMarcus Cousins, I'll ask you this time next year when we have you on the program, are we talking about DeMarcus Cousins, the newly minted, maxed out New Orleans Pelican, or is he gone?
No, I would, if I had to bet anything, I'd just say he's probably somewhere else.
Yep.
Anthony Davis is a lifer, as long as they want him to be a lifer in New Orleans. I just don't see two bigs working, frankly. And I look at that system, the way Alvin Gentry wants to play up and down. You know, it'll make for some interesting games, no question. But without shooting in New Orleans, I just look at that as a very combustible mix that's going to be tough to work out.
Chris Mannix does amazing work along with his colleagues who we started the interview talking about, including one that is still in college. God, I'm such
that's
a
crazy
loser. We always love talking to you. And, you know, as we get closer to the circus at the end of August in mixed martial arts, we got to bring you back on, Chris. Always appreciate your time, buddy.
You got it, guys. Anytime.